Welcome back. It's a Monday, the 13th day of November, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call, and I'm going to start off the news today a bit differently, simply because it is a Monday, and there are so many things going on that ultimately what we have to do is kind of sample the news anymore. There's economic breakdown, there are earthquakes in diverse places, and a whole lot of volcanoes. The Mark of the Beast is roaring towards the finish line, as is World War III. But what there's no shortage of, folks, is just plain weird. We've gone way beyond insanity and idiocy and evil masquerading as, calling evil good and vice versa. The concept of justice isn't even just us anymore. It's been reduced to nothing but a joke. But sometimes stories come out from, admittedly, unlikely places that don't even require comment. The dots just kind of connect themselves. So I'm going to start off with several of those. Most of them, again, ironically, from the Daily Mail out of the UK. One of them says this in the headline, Jonathan Lewis, age 17, is beaten to death by a huge swarm of bullies in Las Vegas after he stood up for a smaller friend that they just robbed. So they kicked him to death. The attack happened on November 1st near Rancho High School in Nevada, where 17-year-old Jonathan Lewis was pummeled, ultimately to death, by around 15 other youths. And get this, folks, the video is even up online, showing the young wannabe demonic horde literally kicking the fella to death. Police officers found him later that day bleeding from the head. He was put on life support at University Medical Center, where he died Tuesday after doctors made a number of attempts to save his life, as it turned out, without success. Said his father to a local news station, violence just begets more violence, gee, do you think? And these children don't even know what they're doing half the time. In the aftermath of the teen's death, after he defended his smaller friend, after he was robbed, video circulated on socialist media showing the moment the fight broke out, and it shows a group of about a dozen youths kicking the 17-year-old as he lies curled on the pavement, while at least two stood nearby filming the attack on their cell phones. You know what, folks? I can't help but hearken back to the beating death of Matthew Shepard that was made a cause célèbre by LGBTQ activists. Anybody remember that? Oh, yeah. 20 years later, there are still articles being written about it. Some of them even have parts that are true. What do you bet Jonathan Lewis is not going to be celebrated by the criminally negligent networks or get a special tribute from the so-called White House? Speaking of which, and this is no surprise to anybody, the senile imposter embarrassed the nation that didn't elect him yet one more time, says the Daily Mail's coverage. Biden sparked concerns, do you think, about his age and his complete incapacity when he again needed directions, this time from an Arlington honor guard, after laying a ceremonial wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier, when he seemed to become disoriented, didn't know where the heck he was going, made a bunch of steps in the wrong direction, before finally being pointed to his spot by a soldier who admittedly had to step out of character a bit. Admitted the Daily Mail in their story, with a characteristic, incredible amount of understatement, Biden has sparked concerns about his age, yeah, among other things, folks. When, in September, he appeared to get lost walking off stage after remarks at the Global Fund Conference. Earlier that same month, he stumbled into a poll and failed to shake the hand of Brazilian Communist President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva after a UN event. And he's even more famous than Gerald Ford, who at least wasn't senile, for stumbles and bumbles that aren't pratfalls or even Chevy Chase. Because of not just one, but repeated stumbles attempting to get on and off the airplane misnamed Air Force One. Now, here I'll have to admit, I did see a pretty cute line from President Trump. Actually, it turns out to have been his spokesperson, Stephen Chung, but the point is the same, who said over the weekend that, quote, the Biden campaign must be confused like their own candidate because Biden is in a constant state of confusion, shuffling around like a Roomba, falling on his ass in front of the American people because he's weak and frail. You know what? It occurs to me, maybe his body's trying to tell the American people what the misguided Ministry of Truth waste-stream media liars just plain won't. And I can't help but observe again that if this imposter can't be ejected from an office that he didn't even steal himself under the 25th Amendment, there's no point in even having the damn thing in the Constitution. And I guess, come to think of it, why not just ditch the oath of office too, because it's obviously a dead letter, so is the Bill of Rights. And now newly elected Speaker Mike Johnson, in case you didn't hear this late last week, has decided, no point in worrying about impeachment either, because no crimes and misdemeanors or even outright treason rise to the level that requires evidence. I guess he just plain has to take a bribe right there on national TV, but then he'd be able to claim he's senile, right? He didn't know what he was doing. Anyway, Mike Johnson has now indicated there is insufficient evidence to move forward with impeachment proceedings against the imposter masquerading as president. Forget the laptop from hell and more evidence of bribes, high crimes, misdemeanors, and outright treason than has ever been amassed, arguably, for all the other presidents combined in all of American history. And there's quite a bit of that. But remember, folks, there are Bible scholars, and I certainly wouldn't argue with this assertion either, that claim a nation seems to get the leadership it deserves. From the Gaza front of World War III, the first ever pride flag, actually two of them, one just a rainbow, the other an Israeli flag with a rainbow, has been raised over Gaza by what has arguably demonstrated that it's not the army of God. Well, you know, at least not that one that wrote the book that American soldiers and sailors don't seem to care too much about either. All of which, folks, leads me to this story under the headline, Are You Sure, Megan? From the same Daily Mail. Women's soccer star, the infamous and literally hateful, some of us might suggest, Megan Rapinoe. You remember her. She hates the American flag. She does love LGBTQ and rainbow flags instead, though. And certainly, of course, Black Lives Matter. And she hates everything associated with, well, truth, justice, and the American way. She has now said that there is no God after the so-called U.S. player sustained what's been called a devastating injury in her last ever game before retirement and had to exit the field only 3 minutes into a championship game after she tore her Achilles tendon in the final match of her long career, the NWSL final. Now, here, folks, is the line that merits the inclusion of this particularly revolting story in the just plain weird kickoff category today. The pink-haired potty-mouthed pervert, and maybe I'm being a bit too kind, said this, and I have to read it, and I'll try to bleep it myself, quote, I'm not a religious person or anything, gee, do you think? And if there was a God, this is proof that there isn't. This is effed up, she said in the post-game interview. To which all I can honestly add is, no comment. Instead, we'll just follow it up with this story. You could call it earthquakes in diverse places or just volcanism worldwide. There's intense eruptive activity now beginning at Mount Etna, located in Sicily in Italy, according to local media on Monday. Aviation alerts are being issued. In Iceland, the government has declared a state of emergency and began mass evacuation of the town of Grindavik over the weekend. The region's been hit by more than 4,000 earthquakes over recent days, and at least 1,000 of those were said to be, quote, recorded within the magma tunnel itself. They're looking for and worried about the big one, it would seem, imminently. Michael Snyder of the Economic Collapse blog has a piece up on Monday entitled, Why is Volcanic Activity Starting to Go Crazy All Over the Planet? He notes it's not just in the places we've already mentioned, he does too, but others. There's even a new island that's begun to emerge from the Pacific Ocean just off the coast of Japan's Iwo Jima. And he's not alone. A number of actual scientist folks, especially those that can observe the great big ball of fusion in the sky known as the sun, are saying there just could be a connection with activity there because the sun has unleashed yet another massive coronal mass ejection set to hit the Earth over the weekend, sparking a major geomagnetic storm Saturday and Sunday. And no, folks, it's nowhere close to as big as the Carrington event, nor was it a direct hit, or it would have all been over by now. And a number of scientists have suggested that increased seismic activity seems to be highly correlated with such things. There's an 11-year cycle and also a 1 in 200-year solar cycle, all of which seem to be associated, no, not with man-made global warming, but the exact opposite. And maybe that's why you're not hearing much about it from the politically correct but arguably scientifically bogus, bought and paid for UN so-called climate scientists. And actually, folks, we'll get back to some of the implications there in just a minute after we finish the just plain weird intro for today. Can you imagine, for example, that the 1 million moms, part of the Conservative American Family Association, is upset about a so-called Thanksgiving Day extravaganza at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, of all things, where a growing number of concerned people have signed a petition slamming the, quote, non-binary and transgender extravaganza set to be slammed down the throats of little kids that thought they were going to be watching something wholesome on Thanksgiving Day morning. The sponsor of the event, Department Store Macy's, did not answer, says the Daily Mail, their request for comment. And you can guess why. I guess, folks, it seems like yet one more woke, sold-out corporation has drunk the Bud Light and is jonesing for the Target treatment. One of the things you regular listeners have probably noticed bothers your host to some degree is bogus science. Things that ignore, well, real mathematics, real statistics, and actual cause, effect, and even costs and benefits. Now, with the obvious and singular exception of bioweapons that are being deployed to kill billions of people worldwide, arguably the biggest mass murder operation in world history, because they are actually real science, even if they're nothing but satanic. Now, they'll accomplish what they're supposed to, too. It's just not what you're being told. But still, when it comes to explicitly and only outright bogus science, non-existent man-made global warming's got to be right at the top of that list. But so are a lot of the things that it's being used to slam down your throats, especially if you don't know any better. Like the benefits, slim as they may be, of so-called EVs, electric vehicles. Turns out, I will suggest that the real benefits of EVs are that Big Brother can control them so easily, tax them so readily, and when they want to, just plain prevent you from going anywhere at all. And that's especially true if they just cut off your power, or some terrorist that they've let into the country shuts down the grid. But the first of today's cases in point comes courtesy of the Texas Public Policy Foundation and other stories writing about it that says the new study found that the real cost, the total cost of fueling electric vehicles, is roughly $17 or so per gallon equivalent. Noting that the hidden costs of refueling EVs drastically outweigh their low upfront alleged fueling costs. And these hidden costs come from the increased burden on the energy grid, gee, do you think, exerted by charging stations and the enormous amount of federal subsidies that it takes to make them even appear to be anything remotely like economical. Quote, EV advocates claim that the cost of electricity for EV owners is roughly equal to $1.21 per gallon of gasoline, but the cost of charging equipment and charging losses averaged out over 10 years and 120,000 miles, if the batteries last that long, folks, is $1.38 per gallon on top of that. Adding the cost of subsidies to the true cost of fueling an EV would equate to an EV owner paying an average of $17.33 per gallon of gasoline, said study authors Brent Bennett and Jason Isaac. And these estimates, they note, do not include the hundreds of billions of dollars more in subsidies in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. How's that for a great big whopping lie? For various aspects of the EV supply chain, particularly when it comes to battery manufacturing, they add. It's not an overstatement to say that the FedGov is subsidizing EVs to a greater degree than even wind and solar electricity generation. And by the way, folks, as your host has talked about for a long time, not only are they expensive when you compare them to anything remotely real, they ultimately don't even pay for the energy that it takes to remanufacture new ones when they wear out. And that's especially true when it comes to wind generation for a lot of reasons, like higher maintenance costs on a continual basis before they do finally die. Anyway, say the authors, it's not an overstatement to say that the FedGov is subsidizing EVs to an even greater degree than wind and solar and embarking on an unprecedented endeavor to remake, or maybe destroy is a better way to put it, folks, the entire American automobile industry. No surprise, regulatory mandates were found to make up the highest chunk of the hidden cost. The study also argues that hybrids are far more efficient than full EVs, but are being ignored by the government because ultimately it's a way to at least in part get around some of the new regulations. Don't worry, Big Brother will fix that. The problem with hybrids, folks, the real problem, of course, they still have one of those things in them called an internal combustion engine that Big Brother doesn't want you to have. And the more you look into the numbers, the more damning the BS associated with EVs really is. Major selling points, says the piece up front in the executive summary, promoted by advocates, are lower maintenance and fueling costs over the life of the vehicle, and the common claim that reductions in battery prices, yeah, if they ever occur, and if Communist China decides to keep selling those rare earth materials and other things that America can't produce, but they now have a global lock on. Well, if battery prices eventually come down, that'll make EVs less expensive than internal combustion engine vehicles. And if horses were free, folks, they still wouldn't want you to ride. I'm going to skip over some of the BS here that's claimed but doesn't seem to comport with reality. Setting aside, say the authors, some of the questionable assumptions used in deriving such favorable economics for EVs, no one has attempted to calculate the full financial benefit, if any, of the wide array of direct subsidies, regulatory credits, and subsidized infrastructure that contribute to the economic viability, and here I have to add, such as it is, of EVs. In this paper, they note, we'll show that the average model MY2021 EV would cost $48,700, call it, more to own over a 7-year period without the $22 billion in government favors given to EV manufacturers and owners. EV advocates claim the cost for electricity of EV owners, and we've mentioned this, is $1.21 per equivalent gallon. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that they leave out. The total, when you add those in, is over $17 a gallon, and that doesn't include the hundreds of billions of dollars more, they note, in subsidies from that Inflation Reduction Act for all kinds of things associated with the EV supply chain. Despite massive incentives, though, EVs are receiving a tepid response from the majority of Americans who can not only see through the BS, but simply can't shoulder the higher cost, especially since most of them now realize a depression is either coming or already at hand. Car lots are swelling with unsold EVs. FOMOCO, Ford Motor Company, is losing over $70,000 on each EV that they currently pawn off on some victim, and EV enthusiasts are holding out for breakthroughs in battery technology, it says, because that's the main factor in their exceptionally high costs, in order to reduce prices and make them even more widespread. What they don't tell you, of course, but your host has for quite a while, if everybody had an EV tomorrow, the grid would simply and immediately fold under the burden that they can't even remotely come close to bearing. And if you've ever seen the ironic, to put it mildly, pictures of EVs lined up behind a diesel generator and a major tankage along a highway somewhere in order to charge them, that'll put to bed any of the environmental BS associated with the whole green agenda besides. And let's not even talk about what you do with dead EV batteries when the time comes to fill up landfills with the things. Furthermore, say the authors, advances in battery tech are measured not in months but decades, and the downward trend of lithium-ion battery costs over the past decade has largely ended, and they cite their source. So it's time, they note, for federal and state governments to stop driving the American auto industry off an economic cliff and allow markets, hey, what a concept, to actually drive further improvements, if any, in cost and efficiency. And as for those other hidden costs that EV owners aren't paying directly, well, notes the piece, when an EV owner connects to the electric grid, just how much are they paying for the extra generation, transmission, and distribution costs that they're now imposing on the grid? And will those embedded costs rise over time? Especially, folks, as they continue the destruction of fossil fuels, as they're called, and the ultimate brownout of the aging power grid anyway. And then there are the federal and state taxes imposed on every gallon of gasoline, compared with tax rebates, on the other hand, for EVs, as well as indirect subsidies created by the federal corporate average fuel economy standards and the EPA's greenhouse gas emission standards, all of which penalize internal combustion engines while at the same time subsidizing something which ultimately is no better environmentally and arguably, as I've suggested, a whole hell of a lot worse. But that's especially true if you finally come to realize that carbon isn't the threat, carbon-based bureaucrats are. Bottom line, we find that the lifetime cost of a typical EV, say the authors, is far greater than that of an ICE EV, and even a significant drop in battery costs, if it ever happens, is unlikely to close the gap in the near future. And let me add one more thing. Turns out that a lot of consumers are finally starting to realize there are some other problems associated with EVs. Ever heard about the burning Tesla issue and people being fried alive in their cars? Or maybe worse still, if their EV catches fire in their garage and maybe kills them in their sleep, it might just take out a whole city block in the process. But one thing's for sure. When the grid goes down, your EV isn't going anywhere. And that's at least what they intend for you anyway, even if the grid doesn't go down and you don't want to participate in the mark of the beast system. So it's kind of a win-win, or maybe a lose-lose as far as Big Brother's concerned, if you begin to see through it. And I'll follow that up with one quick story which makes the same point, but shouldn't surprise you anyway. Congress, with so-called bipartisan support, has passed a kill switch mandate for every vehicle. Whether it's an EV and they can kill it easily, or an ICE EV and it's a little bit tougher after 2026, but one way or the other, the point is made, they want control. And here's the irony, they've already got most of this anyway, because modern electronics allows vehicles to be tracked and pretty well controlled and shut down with most new cars already. This is just making it mandatory and giving them a hammer to hit anybody that tries to circumvent what they've already got the manufacturers to do for them. And after all of that today, folks, I guess I'll wrap up with another one of those stories that's not only a sign of the times, but it buttresses the case I've just made from an entirely different angle. Furthermore, it's also an indicator of things that people just plain aren't paying attention to.
Yeah, this one is a lot bigger than it seems. This comes from Zero Hedge's coverage, and it says that not satisfied to confine their green meddling to gas stoves and gas generators, in other words, folks, LP and natural gas are some of the cleanest fuels on planet Earth, but the fact that they're very abundant in the United States and also relatively, therefore, inexpensive is the real reason the regime wants them gone. The central planners in the Biden regime, White House, now want to raise the price of water heaters by imposing new technology requirements on manufacturers. In other words, folks, yet again, they're going to gang rape the Constitution, the very concept of free enterprise and the ability of consumers and producers to deal with one another without meddling by Big Brother. And as the founders once knew and Adam Smith pointed out, provide better products at lower prices. Well, the point is to provide no products at prices you can't afford. On Friday, the unconstitutional, their term, but it's correct, Department of Energy, and it's actually just the opposite, it's the Department of the Destruction of Energy nowadays, proposed new so-called energy efficiency standards that would in fact require electric water heaters this time, remember you're not going to be allowed to have natural gas ones when they get their way, to come equipped with heat pump technology, and gas heaters would be required to use condensing technology. These standards, they say, would take place in 2020. But guess what, folks? Since the standards are already out there and being mandated, that means that manufacturers will have to start dealing with it, and that means shutting things down essentially immediately. Noting that water heaters and heating accounts for about 13% of U.S. residential energy costs, the Energy Department claimed these new dictates would save consumers over $11 billion annually on their energy and water bills. What a crock. While reducing carbon dioxide emissions, booga, 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 which don't matter for squat if you actually understand real science, by some 500 million metric tons over the next 30 years, which is several lifetimes the way they've got it worked out. Today's actions, and I'm quoting, together with our industry partners and stakeholders, how's that for a communist buzzword you're intended to get used to by now, improve outdated, but of course unconstitutional, efficiency standards. If we had a free economy, there would be no such thing, mandated by Big Brother, for common household appliances, which pretty soon won't be all that common, which is essential to slashing energy bills. You know what will also do it? Slashing the numbers of American consumers by making sure they can't afford any energy, much less appliances that use it, and cutting harmful bullshit carbon emissions, said Energy Secretary, foreign-born Jennifer Granholm. Quote, this proposal, Achtung, reinforces the trajectory of consumer savings that form the key pillar of Bidenomics, a.k.a. a command economy where we command the peons to live in poverty, if they live at all. The counterpoint comes from Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky, who just happens to have two engineering degrees, notes Zero Hedge, and has also removed his Kentucky ranch entirely from the power grid. I guess he can see things that some of us here have been talking about for quite a while. And he regularly shares his clever innovations online. And here, folks, he nails it. And this is the point of spending so much time on the article, both the engineering and the free market economics. Quote, these products, said Massey, already exist in the free market. Consumers can and should decide whether the upfront cost of a heat pump water heater is worth the possible long-term savings. And he notes, in many cases, the monthly savings never make up for the upfront cost of the equipment. Why is that particularly important? Well, in warmer weather or climates, heat pump water heaters might save energy, but they make less sense in northern climates because they have to extract heat from the surrounding air, warm air that your furnace will have to work harder to replace. So there's no free lunch when it comes to these water heaters in the winter. Some water heater manufacturers, like Giant Rheem, immediately moved to endorse the new socialist regulations because that giant company stands to benefit from new regulations that would force smaller, weaker competitors to spend lots of money they can't afford on R&D to meet the green BS standards, or better still, just go out of business. And that would lead to, well, exactly what Big Brother's public-private partners always want, government-sanctioned monopolies. And that would enable them to do what monopolies always do, which is, well, you know it, unless you work for the regime. One of the competitors, tankless water heater maker Renai, has called the new standards, quote, technologically impossible, and warned, correctly, your host would add, that they lead to a narrower range of choices, maybe very narrow, for consumers. And the regime did confirm the latest unconstitutional, tyrannical idiocy. A reporter asked Karine Jean-Pierre just how many more home appliances that Americans will have to get rid of, replace, or never be able to use anymore because of new regulations, saying, quote, so far from this administration, sick, we've seen them go after gas stoves, air conditioning units, and regulate refrigerators, washing machines, dishwashers, now water heaters. Just how many more home appliances will Americans eventually have to replace because of these regulations, to which KGP replied, don't worry, they won't take effect until 2029. But the hammering, of course, has already started. Thanks, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.